You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of September 6th, 2016, and episode number 281. Wow. And this is your host, as always, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. 281. Wow. This week's news includes return of the thylacine, maybe. MUFON sighting statistics for August. And who put the pub in publicity stunt? The pub in publicity stunt. Anyway, we'll talk about that. And what's up with those lights? What's up with that story? Well, you'll find out. We'll also have the book of the week, maybe conferences, conventions, and a little bit more. Some mayhem and mischief. This week's news is brought to you by Chum Bucket Studios. Chum Bucket Studios offers professional, high-quality digital products from prints to movies. Printing, signs, videos, video editing, even website graphics, and much more. It all begins with a little imagination. Check them out today at chumbucketstudios.com. Yeah. Good friend Jay Baitruchin runs that organization there, that little company, Chum Bucket Studios. He helped me out once with a logo, which it's hard for me to relinquish my creativity part for things like that, but he did a heck of a job. So that's why I'm advertising for him, or he's advertising on here, whichever. It pays the bills. So what is going on? Well, I've been pretty busy the last week. A lot of stuff going on. Last Thursday was my birthday. Thank you to all who wish me a happy birthday. Appreciate that. Usually I don't do that on Facebook, but Facebook kept sending me this message over and over about putting my birthday on. So I said, fine, have it your way. I normally don't really, not that I don't care. It's just, I don't like making a big deal about that. It's just a birthday. It's just another year, another candle on the cake. It's, we'll leave it at that. My born on date. So anyway, my wife put on a day of favorites for me. And one of the things that I did besides eat pizza and go to the batting cages was search for Bigfoot. And this is something I saw in the news previously in the week. And one of my local parks, I don't know about other states, but I know here in Ohio, they go nuts over doing these programs about fall hiking sprees. And they always have giveaways. They always have some kind of theme. They always have something that they're doing. And Hudson, Ohio, which is just south of where I live, it's home to the very close to the Cuyahoga Valley National Park, and it's close to Peninsula, Ohio, which is home to the Peninsula Python, which is the forerunner, or the cousin of Wessie, the guy up there in Maine that we're waiting for more news from. And so they have 13 parks, and what they did was they have this little cutout of Bigfoot, and you walk through the park, through the trails, and you attempt to find the Bigfoot. And I thought it would be a little harder. They were pretty easy. We went to a couple of parks. Well, one park I know was kind of out of the way, just to see how it went. And it was pretty easy. It was too easy, but I thought about it, and I thought, you know, what if somebody doesn't know about this program and they're walking around the woods and all of a sudden they see Bigfoot like hidden. So they made it, I think they made it pretty obvious, on purpose. So people didn't get scared out of their wits. But I think it's a really unique thing that they're doing here. And in this particular area, it's not really well known for Bigfoot sightings, but it's, I'm glad that they did this. I think it's a really unique way to get people out in the woods looking for creatures, or looking for anything for that matter, and getting used to seeing these things, or, you know, seeing their parks and everything. And it's a great idea. And like I said, a lot of places around here in Ohio, we have tons of hiking places. You know, I mentioned Cuyahoga Valley National Park. We have, they call the Emerald Necklace around Cleveland, the Cleveland Metro Parks, and a lot of smaller parks. We have Summit Metro Parks, which is Summit County, where I live, all kinds of parks, one down the street. That's really nice. And yeah, so that was that. Had a lot of fun searching for Bigfoot. And I put some pictures on my Facebook page, and a lot of people had some fun with that. And if you're in the chat room, you saw one of those pictures as well. So if you're interested in that, I'm going to throw that in the chat room. I don't know. It's a regional thing. It's pretty, you know, it's here in central or northeast Ohio. So you're probably not going to do it. But if you're in Ohio, you're in the area of Akron or Cleveland, check it out. It's worth it. It's fun. It's entertaining. So what else? Man, oh man, it's still the first week of September. I don't want to get too carried away here, but my Westerville Public Library appearance is coming up quickly. And that's going to be my 8th consecutive year, and I'm going to be doing that on October 27th at 7 p.m. And if you want to go to that, you're going to want to go online to the Westerville Public Library website and reserve a spot. It fills up pretty fast. Sold out pretty much every year. Well, not sold out, because I don't sell tickets. It's free. It's a library, which I love those because they're free. And my books are at this particular library. And I'm excited to visit my books, but at the same time, I'm a little let down that they're there. And I feel bad that they're lonely sitting in the library where they should be out and about being read by somebody. Just not in the bathroom. Don't take my book in the bathroom, please. Westerville, that is northeast of Columbus, Ohio. So right there in the middle of the state, if you're interested in that presentation. I'll be doing a ghost presentation, and I haven't done a ghost presentation since the year prior at Westerville. So, yeah, well, they want me to pull out some old evidence and things. I'm not big on the whole evidence thing because, to me, it's just documentation. Evidence would be something that's verifying claims, and it's really hard to go that distance, but that's what the people want to see. So I'll have to put up multiple disclaimers about things and just talk about it, but they'll ignore that and just focus on the stuff. So I'm going to be pulling out some old EVPs, some old photographs, but I'll still be teaching some of the misconceptions and misperceptions that people have with ghosts and things like that. So don't miss that. Again, October 27th, Westerville Public Library, 7 p.m. And I usually talk until they lock us in. I'm very well known for that. I'm the last one to leave the building, and they usually get locked out by the security guard. Yeah. So 8th consecutive year. Excited about that. And there's a lot of, man, it's a birthday. Got this 8th consecutive year. And next week is my 10th year anniversary. 10 years. Being married. I made it, I guess. I guess after you make 7, that's you're pretty much in, right? We're going back to where we went for our honeymoon, which is Alaska. So I'm obviously not going to be here for the show. Thought about doing a live show, but I'll probably be divorced by the time I got back. So it'll be a little hard too, because it's the time difference, you know, all those things. And I don't know where I'll be exactly. So anyway, I will be taking next week off. Taking a little vacation, and I deserve it, because speaking of anniversaries, today, well, not today, actually the 8th, will mark the 1-year anniversary of the Paranormal News Insider being here on WCJVradio.com. So a year. I made it, I guess. I guess the ratings were good enough. I didn't get fired. I didn't get canceled or anything like that, which happens in the radio business. Quite a bit. It's the radio business. So making a year, that's pretty impressive. And I've only taken 1 week off. So I guess I deserve, you know, 1 more week off my second year, I guess. So I'm going to use it right away. Actually, this is only my 51st episode on WCJV, my 51st one-hour standalone show, I guess. And the last time I took a week off was in April for a cruise. Yeah, I guess I like cruising. Never thought I would, to be honest. It's different. And I like a lot of control over when I travel, but I'm addicted to it. It's fun. It's really neat and exciting. And it's if you've never been on a cruise and you're saying it's stupid or silly, you need to do more research. Talk to me. I'll tell you. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it. It's fun. Yeah, back to the anniversary here of the show. I started September 8th of last year, and I was kind of going through a lot of stuff. My dog had passed away, and we were supposed to start the show back up in July, and it just never happened. And I did a standalone episode, and I was marketing it to other shows, and nobody really had any interest in carrying my pre-recorded segment. It was something I've been doing for since 2008 on another show, The Grand Dark Conspiracy, which is no longer on the air. He changed the name to The Darkest Hours Late Night the last year we were on the air. And I started out, I was the first guest of that show way back in, I think, April or May of 2008. And then we talked about potentially doing some kind of news segment. In September, I came back as the guest once again. And he had had ghost people on each month. So we kind of switched gears. We talked cryptozoology. We talked UFOs and talked a lot about news. 2008, September, was when the Georgia Bigfoot hoax was at its peak. So there was plenty of stuff to talk about. And 2008 was a great year for paranormal news anyway. So we talked about that. Then, the show debuted a couple of weeks later and finished out the year. We did, again, it was a monthly show. So for 2 years, I did a monthly show. Then 2010, we went weekly. And I've been doing weekly ever since. In 2014, we were on a radio station out of Marysville, Ohio, and ownership changed, and he decided to leave before we were pushed out the door, and search for another place to land. It just unfortunately just didn't happen, and you know sometimes it's time to move on, and he moved on, and. I don't know. I just felt the bug and I wanted to continue to do this. So after a couple of months, I'd been a guest on a show here on the network. May not remember it. It's called Paranormalities and Ponderings with host Frank Lee, which will be returning hopefully soon. We miss you, Frank. And so I was already familiar with the network, familiar with Cindy, who produces everything here, and felt like it was a good place to land. And I'd done my research. I talked to a lot of other people, a lot of other hosts on other shows. I knew a lot of other networks. I knew some reputations out there, and I just didn't want to deal with all that. There's a lot of drama. Believe it or not, there's a lot of drama with being on the radio. Whether you're on terrestrial radio, satellite radio, or you're just Joe Schmo on your paranormal podcast, it doesn't matter. Radio is radio no matter where you go. And I just wanted it to be comfortable and relaxing and straightforward, to the point. Here's my stuff. Don't tell me what to say. Don't tell me what to advertise. Leave me alone and let me do my show, which is exactly what they've done here. And I try to do my best each and every week for you guys, the listeners. And that's my year. That's my 1 year speech. Wait till like 5 years. We'll do the whole show. Something. I don't know. I'm going to have to get ahead of myself here. So that's that. And what else is going on coming up this year? My goodness, the Ghost Excavation Conference. Looking forward to this. They finally released the website, full run of all the speakers. I was holding my breath. I figured I was in. I kind of spilled the beans, but I kind of figured I'd spoken the first two times at the Ghost Excavation Congress Convention, the first one that took place in Bedford, Maryland, a number of years ago. This is the third Ghost Excavation Conference, and that's November 4th through the 6th in Bedford, Pennsylvania. That's southern Pennsylvania, kind of southeast Pennsylvania, east of Pittsburgh. It's where everything cool happens in that part of Pennsylvania. Now, this isn't your run-of-the-mill paranormal convention. This is actually a serious conference with those that are involved in conducting real work in the ghost research field beyond the subjective tools and the type of stuff you see on television. This is more about environmental stuff, not with tools and technology, but with interaction with people and different things. It depends on the speaker. If you know anything about the E4 method, that's what I'll be talking about here for the third time. And I'll be discussing some successes and some failures with the method, as well as how to go forward or how to move in a different direction with the E4 method. John Sable and Mary Becker, who are hosting the event, will both be speaking at that event. John is, if you've never seen John Sable speak, you got to see him. He's very intense. He's very blunt, very to the point. And he gets his point across one way or the other. He's very intense, but he's extremely knowledgeable. And also speaking are, let's see, Robert Brad Bradley, Kelly Weaver, John Weaver, and a friend and colleague of mine, Brandon Masulo, will also be on hand talking about, let's see here, the ingredients for a ghostly experience. That's what I get for not writing things down here. Jonathan Williams, who has an extensive law enforcement and forensics background, will also be speaking. And author Patty Wilson, she's also going to be presenting that weekend as well. And they're going to be doing some ghost excavations at the, I can't remember what it's called, but it's the big hotel there in Bedford. It's got a very haunted history. We'll probably talk about that as we get a little closer to that event. And third ghost excavation conference .webs.com. You can find more information about that as well. So as we get closer, I'll be pushing that out through social media a little bit more. And then next year, I'm already looking forward to this. This has been all over social media. The Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure is going to be back next year, May 5th through the 7th, 2017, in Farmington, Pennsylvania. Tickets are going to go on sale very soon. That's why I'm talking about this now. Steve Cole, Stan Gordon, and myself are returning speakers. Jay Bajachin and host Eric Altman will be first-time speakers next year. Eric was there last year, but he was tied up doing all the hosting duties and emceeing the event. Dave Dragason, who spoke last year, will be the MC this year. Very, very awesome artist and very knowledgeable researcher in the Bigfoot field in Pennsylvania. And there's supposed to be some big names rumored to be appearing. I think there's an announcement this weekend I'm going to miss because I'll be out of town. But Trapper John Tice, John R. Tice from Mountain Monsters, will also be back. And some other stuff going on. I'm not going to talk about all this stuff. My goodness. How important am I? Sharon Hill. I want to talk about this. I just saw this prior to coming on the air. I was posting something on Facebook on Paranormal News Insider, letting you know that the show starts at 7. And hopefully you made it in time. And I came across this this article posted by, I think it was shared by Benjamin Radford. And Sharon Hill, if you don't know who she is, she's a skeptical researcher, investigator, just more or less a researcher. And she's not a big fan of the paranormal, as you can guess, but she's pretty level-headed. And she I do use some of her stories as kind of a balance to some of the stuff that's put out there. Sometimes it's just a little hard to read on these paranormal sites. And I'll go to the original sources. I don't like filtered information. I like the facts. I like whoever wrote the article first. I always trace the sources of articles back to the original sources so I can get the correct information. And if I have to email somebody, I'll do that as well. But she provides a nice balanced look at a lot of these things. And apparently, she pointed out that some of these paranormal news sites are actually using hoaxed photos, known hoaxed photos, so they're known to be hoaxed, to accompany some of the stories that are put on there. And well, I'm well aware of that. You know, I look at these sites as well. I use them for my Paranormal News Insider show here. And like I said, though, I just use them as a launching point. Then I start researching the information. I don't really bother with those self-interpreted sites too much, but that's not good to use hoax photos. But what's worse is that Sharon Hill's been banned on a couple of these news sites, on message boards, and through some social media sites for pointing this out, for letting these places know, hey, some of the stuff you're using is hoaxed. It's known to not be legitimate. That's a little worrisome, because paranormal news has a hard enough time being viewed as legitimate as it is without being pointed out as using misinformation. I mean, it's bad enough our regular media screws up all the time or does things that are inaccurate, but come on, we've got to do better than that. And if you're in the chat room, you saw a little thing that Dita put up about the anniversary of the show, with 1 year anniversary, and talked about pretty much my integrity. If I know I'm wrong, I'm going to say I'm wrong. If I don't know, I'm going to say I don't know. And that's part of being a journalist. That's part of reporting news, is doing it as objectively as possible. Now, I do interject with my opinion about things, but I let you know, this is what I think. That's how I feel. I don't say that these are facts. And for us to pass along information that's misinformation without doing some research, which is, again, why I research these stories. I go to the original sources because I don't want to get caught giving you the wrong stuff. And sometimes I'm wrong. Sometimes I do put stuff out there that later on I realize I got tricked or I caught misinformation. I don't do it on purpose. But when you run a paranormal site like this, and I understand that some of these, I know like the Anomalous, there's only like three people that operate that entire website. And they recently just lost somebody due to their passing. So that's got to be tough when you're running a website that hundreds of thousands of people are looking at almost daily to keep that going and keep it going in the right direction. It's hard, but you have to provide good information as a journalist. If you're going to be in the business, man, do it right. And I know not everybody agrees with Sharon. There was a story, I don't know which one it is. I think it's actually the one I'm going to be talking about next, that her information I really didn't agree with. And I kind of just shook it off and said, you know, I'm not going to use this because it's really out there. It's sometimes skeptics or even people who believe sometimes will just shoot too far in the direction of their opinions. And, sometimes it just makes it just not believable. But I'll talk a little bit about what she said. One thing that she said kind of bothered me. But anyway, cryptid news. Talk some cryptid news here. And this is like the big story this week. Because Wessie, I don't know. He must be going on vacation. I think he's packing his bags and he's heading to Florida. Rumor is he's going to have a condo down in Florida. So maybe he's not around. But we're going to be talking about... Yeah, we're going to be talking about the thylacine. A video shot back in February of this year just hit the internet, and the person who filmed it thinks that a creature seen in the video is nothing more than the Tasmanian tiger, also known as the thylacine. The video was uploaded to the Thylacine Awareness Group yesterday on its Facebook site. The shaky video does show a large creature walking by a home across the street from the person filming it. Researcher and member of the Thylacine Awareness Group, Neil Water, states, quote, "You can see the body of the animal. It does appear to have some sort of dark discoloration, which may or may not be stripes. It has a long, stiff, pointy tail, and where the tail connects to the body is very wide at the base, which is typical of the thylacine," unquote. So the body color and movement of the creature do seem to make it a good candidate for a thylacine. And looking at it, watching it myself, I watched it a few times. They do slow it down. But I slowed it down even further. I kind of adjusted everything a little bit and took a couple screen caps and blew it up and looked. And it does look very thylacine-ish, if that's a word. I don't really see much in the way of potential for fraud through Photoshop or any other video editing. But I'll tell you what, stuff has gotten so good nowadays, it's really hard to tell, especially when the video is shaking. because it does kind of play some tricks on you. But yeah, it does look thylacine-ish. And the one thing that Sharon Hill said that kind of bothered me was that she says, granted, we don't know that it's a thylacine. I agree. It could be anything. But she said it could be a kangaroo. It did not look like anything like a kangaroo at all to me. And to throw something out there like that, I think that's just silly. Grasping at straws. I mean, yes, it could be anything. It could be, I would lean more towards a dingo or a dog before I would say a kangaroo. That's just crazy. But yeah, we don't know it's a thylacine. Just because this group is putting this on here does not mean that it is a thylacine. We just haven't been able to actually physically capture it. But the problem I have with this video is that it's very short and it doesn't show a whole lot. It's very quick. The thylacine comes in and goes out. If it is a thylacine, the creature, I should say, goes in and out. We don't really know enough. We don't see it out in the open. We don't see it display behavior that we know is of a thylacine from the video that we have shot of the early 1930s when they were captured. So it's really hard to tell. It's exciting, but it's also a letdown because the video is really and truly is just speculative at best. Now, the group chose today to post this video because today is National Threatened Species Day. And so they wanted to show it to the world on National Threatened Species Day, which, you know, I get it. That's appropriate. And they feel that this is a juvenile thylacine in the Adelaide Hills region of southern Australia. It's kind of like south, almost southeast of in Australia. So it's actually in the right area if it is a thylacine, although thylacines have not been seen on the mainland for a long, long, long time. The good news is that in addition to this video, there are five witnesses who claim to have seen the creature in a nearby area last March. So it was a year ago prior to this video, which that's great. But again, it's speculation because we don't know. They're not 100%. And that's a long time. A year is a long time for something not to be seen. Granted, it could be just a handful of animals here. And they think that that's the same animal. Now, the last known thylacine died of exposure in the Hobart Zoo in Tasmania in 1936, back on September 7th of 1936, which coincidentally is actually currently Wednesday, September 7th in Australia right now. Weird, I know. So stay tuned as the Thylacine Awareness Group claims that this is just the first of five videos they plan on releasing about sightings of the creature in the area. Well, why don't they just do it all at once? Why do they wait so many months to put this on here? It's kind of weird. That's the thing I have a hard time really understanding. Why would you sit on this evidence for so long? Granted, it would be good to sit on it if you're doing research, if you're trying to investigate it, and you're trying to get more information before you just throw some random video out there. If it does tie into actual physical evidence you get, then that's when I would release a video. You don't just get a video and just throw it on the internet. But to sit on something for that long, have you done the work? Have you looked for it? Have you been in the area? If you haven't, then what's the point of putting the video out there? Anyway, you could have just done it when you first got it. Well, they're using the attention that they're getting from this first video to help raise money to continue to film in the area. That's kind of a red flag. Anytime there's money involved with just some random video here that they're putting on, I get it. You know, you need the money to go out and research. I need the money too, but I'm not going to beg for money to go searching in the woods for Bigfoot. I'm going to, you know, I don't know. It's red flag for me. And hopefully the next time they launch a video, it won't be a broken record and they're going to sit there and for money, because that's a giant red flag. And we see a lot of that here in the United States with Bigfoot researchers who make a lot of big claims and ask for big checks, and then the evidence comes out, and it's very speculative, very fake, and very hoaxed. So hopefully they'll have some evidence pretty soon. And and I'll be honest with you, I've talked about this in the past. I truly think that if you look at all the cryptids, all the animals that, all the categories of cryptids, animals that have had their day, that are extinct, that have been sighted, that possibly they're still around, or animals, you're talking millions of years, a long time ago, or even just recently, such as like the thylacine is a good example, or the ivory-billed woodpecker is another good one, a good candidate, I think, to be rediscovered. They've tried. But I think those two right there are two of the biggest that have the potential for being discovered, or I should say rediscovered. And mainstream science has pretty much given up on those guys. Even the ivory-billed woodpecker, they've kind of given up on that. So that would be good for cryptozoology to focus on kind of legitimate animals instead of looking for strange flying humanoids and weird creatures that would go against physics and things. I'm not saying don't look for those, but it's good that cryptozoology can get that focus. So hopefully this group isn't just trying to pad their wallets here, and they're actually doing some getting out there looking for this stuff, and hopefully they'll find it. That or the Yowie. There was a story about the Yowie too. I didn't put in the news. There's really nothing to report about that. So anyway, in case you're wondering, you are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York. Thank you. Thank you for listening. And it's emanating live at WCJVradio.com. And you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And now we're going to move into UFO news. UFO news. I don't know why there's a picture of little pigs in the chat room. I'm not sure what's going on there, but that's kind of scary to see that. It's about as scary as all the clown stuff. What's going on with the clown stuff going on? Oh, my goodness. Anyway, UFO news. We're going to jump into this. Now, I don't know if Dita in the chat room remembers what my mark was, what my guess was last month for this month, or how does that go? I made a guess for August, for July, for August. Yeah, July for August. So my numbers, I was not very good last month, but we'll see. We'll see tonight. Hopefully you guys remember what my numbers were. If not, it's in the archive. It's in the archive. You can listen. I forget what show it was, but I wrote it down. So UFO news. Tonight, we're going to talk MUFON sighting statistics. That's what I was talking about here. And big thanks to Audrey Hamilton. She's always in the chat room. Well, almost always in the chat room. I think she's back. Okay, she's back. She left there for a minute, but she's back. She's always hanging out in the chat room, usually. And she helps me out a lot by providing the UFO sighting statistics from MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network. And I don't know. I've just had a hard time getting a hold of those over the course of the last few months. I was doing this for years on the show, and I was getting them directly in my email box, but now I'm not, and I'm a MUFON member, so I wasn't sure what was going on, but now she gets them to me even faster than I was getting them before. So huge thanks to Audrey Hamilton, who is a MUFON field investigator as well. So that's cool. It's awesome. So we're talking August. It is September now, but we're looking back at last month. Don't get confused. Hopefully I won't confuse you. Sometimes I talk too fast, but so we're looking, here it is, September 6th. I get these numbers, like, I think I got them on the 1st or the 2nd. So we're looking at August. Now in July, looking back, there were 710 total worldwide reports, with 520 coming from the United States. Now last month I predicted 586 total reports. Oops, so I was a little off, more than a little off. That was pretty bad. And I guessed 432 coming from the United States. So yeah, it was off by like 90 there as well. So that was not a good guessing month for myself. And luckily I didn't play the lottery either. Okay, well, August, I predicted 695 total worldwide reports, 695 total reports Got it? Now, MUFON, Mutual UFO Network, reported, drumroll please, 696. I was one off. I was really excited when I saw that. I thought, no way, that can't be right. I was actually going to add everything up. There's no way I was off by only one. That's pretty good. I'd say I pretty much nailed that one. Yeah, fine, it was a good guess, but still, I was pretty impressed with that because I took a little time to think about it. So, okay, well, I was impressed. Maybe you weren't, but it was a good guess. Now, as far as the United States totals, I predicted 515, and MUFON reported 489. It's pretty close. Not as good as my other number, but it's close. Now, Canada, out of that total 696, Canada turned in the second most reports with 64. United Kingdom turned in 38. Germany and Australia had 12 each. India had 10. Portugal and Spain, for my Portuguese and Spaniards friends here who are listening to the show, hola, they turned in 6 reports each. And Ireland and Iran turned in 5 reports each. 34 more countries turned in at least one report, including Antarctica. I love seeing Antarctica appear in the MUFON sighting statistics for countries because I find it fascinating to see them on the list because a majority of the people that are in Antarctica at any given point in time are scientists. These are trained observers. These are people that are doing work. And if they're seeing strange things, they can't identify. And there's not a whole lot of airplanes flying around Antarctica or helicopters for that matter. There are some pretty wicked birds, but penguins don't fly. So what are they seeing down there? So I think I always find that fascinating. Now, of those 34 countries, only 22 of those 34 remaining countries turned in one report, including the aforementioned Antarctica. Now, state-wise, California topped the list, not surprisingly, with 48 reports. Now, one more thing about the countries. Now, it doesn't sound very impressive to have 48 reports out of 696. It's very small, or I should say 64. Canada had 64 out of 696. But they have their own reporting systems. And MUFON is not as influential over the United Kingdom as it is here. And it's just a different culture thing. And you know, MUFON's trying their best to become more of a worldwide reporting center. And I think it's important that we funnel stuff as much as we can into one area. Not that I'm siding with MUFON, but that I think other organizations should at least say, hey, this is what we got. We're going to report this, but we're going to give this to other organizations that want it to pool their information together. But anyway, so California topped the list once again. No big deal because they had the largest population, so they should be number one. They had 48 reports. Florida turned in 32. New York had 31. Texas, 26. Washington State had 23. Pennsylvania had 21. Ohio turned in 18. Michigan, 17. Colorado and Georgia had 16 reports each. Arizona had 15. Missouri and Tennessee had 13. I don't know what state you live in. Oregon and Minnesota had 12 each. I'm going to keep going. Virginia and New Jersey had 11. Utah, Illinois, and Wisconsin turned in 10 each. And, well, heck, you know, I might as well just finish the list here. Maryland, Indiana, and North Carolina had 8 each. Vermont, Massachusetts, and Connecticut all packed together there. They had 7 sightings each. New Mexico and Montana had 6 each. Alabama, Nevada, Arkansas, New Hampshire, Iowa, Kansas, and Kentucky all had 5 each. And Oklahoma, South Carolina, West Virginia had 4. Hawaii, Nebraska, Mississippi, and North Dakota had 3. And Maine, Idaho, Louisiana, 2. South Dakota and Wyoming turned in 1 report each. And if I didn't name your state, well, you didn't turn anything in. That's your fault. DC is also on there sometimes, and the outlying islands I think are also included. I think U.S. Virgin Islands. I don't remember, but anyway. Now, what I like to do here with the state sightings? Why bother saying that when again California has the largest population of any state. So having them number one really doesn't make sense, because how does that break down by population? So I do something that MUFON used to do. Maybe if they pay me, I'll do it for them. But they used to break things down per capita. Now, it's not impressive because you're usually getting percentages of people. But generally, per capita, anything is broken down by 100,000 people. So what I do is I take the total number of reports per state, divide it by the population of said state, and then multiply that by 100,000. And that number that you get is usually a decimal. It's a percentage, it's a fraction, whatever. And that represents how many people, or how many parts of a person, I guess, out of 100,000 saw a, or I should say reported a UFO. And looking back, Vermont has hit the list quite a few times. Back in February, it was 0.47, so almost half of a person out of 100,000, or you could say one out of every 200,000 people reported a UFO back in February. In March, it was a little higher. It was 0.64. Granted, there was only four sightings. And let's see. Well, April was Arizona with 0.39. Not really that impressive. Alaska in May had 0.54. But again, that's only four sightings. They don't have that big of a population. Just granted, it's the largest state by area, but they don't have that large of a population. And Alaska topped the list in June with 0.68, with five sightings. Now, last month, Vermont took it with 0.64, again, with four sightings. Well, Vermont won it again here in August. Vermont had a per capita sighting of 1.12. The first time I've ever had like a whole person, one in 100,000 people, with seven sightings for the month. Maybe that's why MUFON didn't really do it. It's not really that impressive, but to me, it breaks down which state is highest, which state is actually seeing more per capita. And California is pretty insignificant. Even with 48 sightings, it only breaks down to 0.124. It's actually pretty low on the list. That would put California way less than half, down in the further end, but not quite at the end, but about three quarters of the way down of the list of states that turned in reports for last month. And Vermont, there's only 626,011 people in the state, according to the 2014 U.S. population census estimates. So seven sightings, the number of sightings is not significant, I don't think. But the per capita is, so it's pretty significant. But again, we're talking sighting reports for the month. We don't know when they happened. I'd have to do the research. They could be historical reports. They may have happened. They may have been reported at the beginning of the month, but they were for the prior month. It could have been for July. So who knows? It's just kind of a gauge. It's just kind of a way to sit back and evaluate things statistically, which is hard to do in any kind of paranormal or anomalous field. So statistics are science, and it gives us something to look at. Granted, there are errors, like I just mentioned. We don't know when these cases happen. You could go back in to the MUFON case management system and evaluate that and get a better look at that. But again, it's really not that significant, so it's probably really not worth it. And there are individual investigators that are investigating these cases. So if there is something significant, you'll probably hear about it here on the show. Now, Montana turned in 0.59, which is pretty good. Six sightings for them. North Dakota, 0.41 with their three sightings. New Hampshire with 0.38 with five sightings. Utah, 0.34 with 10 sightings. Sounds like I'm talking about blood alcohol levels here. Washington State had 0.33 with 23 sightings. And it just kind of goes down from there. So again, big thanks to MUFON field investigator Audrey Hamilton and chat room attendee for this month's sighting statistics. And trivia about Audrey, she's the first and only guest ever to appear on the Paranormal News Insider. Don't know if you knew that or not. So, wow, time is really moving by fast. If you want to keep in touch with what's going on with the show, or you missed a segment, or you miss something that I've talked about, and you can't really, you don't have time to look for it, generally after the show is over, over the course of the next week, I do put up some links through Facebook, and the Facebook site actually regurgitates that. Regurgitates that information onto Twitter. So anything I type into Facebook automatically goes to Twitter for the Paranormal News Insider stuff. And I do Google Plus as well. And Pinterest when I get time, when I feel like it. And that's pretty much the extent of all that. That's all I have time for. Come on, man. I'm a busy guy. But the show itself, immediately following this, it appears on Mixcloud through WCJV. And then I upload it into Podbean, which is my kind of my host, my home for all the archives of this show. And then from there, it just goes crazy. Stitcher, Spreaker, iTunes, Pocket Casts, everywhere and anywhere. It's all over the place. So you can find the show on your favorite podcast listening app or website for that matter. And check out the show in different ways. Because I know everybody likes... They have their own way of listening to these podcasts and these shows. And we don't all have time. Because I know Ron Murphy said he doesn't have time to listen to my show. And I told him I wouldn't, wasn't going to mention him this week. But yeah, I got his book on Dogman. I'll be reading that while on vacation. So that'll probably be the book of the week when I return. So why did I say that? Well, anyway, you'll find out. Now we're going to jump into ghost news real quick before I run out of time. And this is an interesting story, not the biggest story, but it's kind of a weird story, I think. James Stanley, who is this particular James Stanley, I guess, was the 7th Earl of Derby. He wanted to be an Earl of something. I think that would be cool. He was beheaded. Well, maybe I don't want to be beheaded on October 15th, 1651 in Bolton, which is in England. Now, at the time, his family owned a business called Man and Scythe. We have a hard time with that word. Scythe. In where he had been just prior to his execution. I guess he was eating dinner because they had the chair that he sat in on display. Cool. Now, today, the Ye Old Man and Scythe remains as the 4th oldest pub in Britain, even though it has been remodeled extensively over the years. Now, the pub has been proud to be the home of the ghost of James Stanley and was even the subject of a viral video back in 2014 that allegedly showed the ghost on film. Now, this got the attention of a Chinese artist named Liu Pingwan. Now, Pingwan reportedly came to the pub and persuaded the ghost of Stanley to allow him to capture him. How nice. Which he purportedly did. On a subsequent visit while in the bathroom. That's creepy. If you're going to capture a ghost, I can see it in the kitchen, but the bathroom, that's a little disturbing. Hopefully he wasn't in a stall. Anyway, I don't even want to think about that. Now the ghost of Stanley is on display in a sealed metal canister at the Center for Chinese Contemporary Art in Manchester. Now, he did this without notifying the owner of the pub. So Richard Greenwood, the owner of the pub, is furious and is demanding his ghost is returned. I guess it's bad for business not to have your ghost, right? However, it seems as though Greenwood is willing to negotiate with Pingwan by donating the chair that Stanley reportedly sat in for his last meal prior to getting executed in the streets of Bolton. As long as the chair and the ghost are returned to the bar after the end of the tour. However, it doesn't sound like Pingwan has the same idea. As he says about the ghost, quote, I was totally captivated by the legend that the ghost remained in the human world long after his decapitation. I wish him to exist and be treated as a real artwork and to be present him and to present him around the globe, getting respect and tribute from people everywhere. I told his ghost about my proposal the second time I visited this place, and James Stanley agreed that I can put him into a jar in order to exhibit him in galleries and museums alike. Therefore, in this way, he became a piece of art. I consider my exhibit at CFCCA to be the beginning of his worldwide trip. After this exhibition, I plan to prepare for the next one in 2017. My original thought is that after the world tour of exhibitions, I will discuss with him and ask him whether he would prefer to stay like this as a piece of art or go back to the ye old man and Sith, unquote. Well, I guess he's his manager now. So is this for real? Or is this just kind of an elaborate publicity stunt for the pub and the art exhibit? Well, I'll answer that for you. Don't think too hard. I would have to say publicity stunt. Why? Well, first of all, it's in the news. And he went to the media to complain about this. And it's kind of been just a big joke. Is it really bad for business that your ghost isn't there anymore? I mean, why would you kick and scream and cry about it? But anyway, it's a weird story. It's an interesting story. And you know what? I think I forgot to put it in the chat room here. So I'm going to put that in the chat room. You guys can write. There you go. So yeah, if you're missing the chat room, you're missing these instant leaks, links that get added to these stories, a little additional information for y'all to digest. And one story here I want to talk about. This kind of ties in with the book of the week this week. Now, this comes from an article I saw that popped up in the WCJV Facebook page. And if you're not following WCJV, you need to follow their Facebook feed because there's a ton of great stories, ton of great information that's being passed along. And yeah, I get my stuff from everywhere. I frequent a lot of places, but it's nice when you see stuff pop up on your Facebook feed that you can take and talk about and do a little research on. So check it out. And while I already knew the explanation, I was a bit surprised that people were still obsessed with something mysterious even when they knew the explanation. I would assume that the locals know the explanation for this. But the article in question centers on the what's called the Paulding Light, which is a light that appears in the sky at the end of a dead-end road in the Ottawa National Forest near Paulding, Michigan. Now, the light has been seen since the mid-1960s, and is coincidentally enough, it's about the same time that a road was put in that the lights were seen. So weird coincidence? I don't know. But many describe the light as a pure white light that hovers in the sky. But researchers determine the light to be nothing more than distant car lights. A lot of people argue that. And I've seen a documentary where people were like basically yelling at the person filming, saying that can't be cars. But it was pretty obvious to me. Despite this, many do still cling to the urban legends surrounding this story and still show up in droves to see the light. I guess how else do you put that? The Paulding Lights might not be a household name, but have you heard of the Marfa Lights? Yes, Marfa, Texas. The Marfa Lights are named for a Texas town east of a location called Mitchell Flat, where mysterious lights dance in the sky. The lights have become a major fascination and a tourist trap, which led to the building of a giant platform to observe the lights. Again, engineers determined that the lights were caused by vehicles as well as by natural phenomena occurring in the desert. And again, many locals argue this as an explanation. And while doing research, I've read a lot about the Marfa lights. I've been in the area. I wasn't able to make it all the way out to Marfa. I was running low on time. And I wouldn't have been able to get there till probably early morning anyway, so I just opted to miss it. But eventually, one day, I hope to see it, even though I know the solution. See, even I am drawn to this location, even though I already know. But just to see it with my own eyes. I read an article on the Marfa Lights while researching this topic, and the person who wrote it was a believer in the lights, and he argued about the study initially and said there's no way. He'd seen the lights, and he there's no way. It does not explain it. So he was convinced they were definitely not car lights his first time seeing it. Now, after Hearing about the explanation, he went back and observed looking for answers, being rational about it. And then he, I think he used like, I don't know, binoculars or telescope or whatever to look and watch the lights move. And he realized that he was definitely wrong. So it was interesting to see somebody who had believed previously, then realized he was wrong. Now, Gurdon, Arkansas also has similar lights that defy explanation. And they also have an urban legend attached to it where supposedly a railway worker had died, which is kind of the same story for the Paulding lights. And just like the Paulding light, the Gurdon light was determined to be distant cars again. Then you have the Hesteland lights in Norway. Those have been seen since the 1930s, and there's no cars in the area for that one. But weird stuff there. No conclusive explanation, although they think it's scandium deposits or ionized air, which causes a battery effect caused by the geology of the river or around the river, which is kind of a weird thing, and even the related piezoelectric effect. But again, car traffic, definitely not a factor. Brown Mountain lights, that's another one you might have heard of here in the United States. That's a pretty popular one. Brown Mountain lights, again, nothing more than vehicle lights, although people are very adamant about that one as well. I know Joshua P. Warren is very adamant that it's not. He feels it's ball lightning, which I don't know about that. Ball lightning and a lot of other things from temperature inversion to starlight refraction, something like that, are thought to be the cause of that as well. But who knows? And that's pretty much it for those light thingies. The book of the week this week kind of deals with that story. And when I read this story, I was already doing research for a topic, something here in Ohio, writing an article on. And I just decided to make it the book of the week because, hey, why not? I really haven't done too many things about local stuff. I should say local stuff here in Ohio here on the show about Ohio urban legends and things. But I decided I'm going to do it here. And so the book of the week this week is It Came from Ohio, True Tales of the Weird, Wild, and Unexplained, a book by James Renner. And now I read this book a long time ago. Well, I shouldn't say a long time ago. It's only been out since 2012, I believe. I read it when it first came out. And I was really, really disappointed because it was a book that I had wanted to write myself on local urban legends, a lot of folklore, a lot of things associated here in the Buckeye State. And yeah, I was pretty disappointed because, man, it just had a lot of stuff that I dealt with already or wanted to talk about, the Loveland Frog, the Mothman, Bigfoot, the flying saucers over Mansfield, the flying saucers that was seen at, where was that? I know it's in here somewhere. Well, the beginning of the Close Encounters of the Third Kind, that was actually UFO chase was based on the Portage County UFO chase that happened here in Ohio, just south of where I am, which is kind of cool. So a lot of urban legends. Also talks about the WOW signal, which I've talked about here. I got to visit the location down there at close to Ohio State University down there as well. So there's 13 stories of stuff from here in Ohio, from all the stuff I said to a lot of other weird, crazy and creepy stuff. Melonheads, werewolves, Mothman, and a lot more. So it's a local urban legend type book. James Renner, It Came from Ohio. Good book. I had it in my pile. And like I said, I was just doing some research on some stuff and decided to, I don't know, just make it the book of the week. I just read it again. And I got a huge pile of books that I'm currently reading. And I've taken a couple on vacation with me next week. So I did miss one thing here. Looking at time, I keep getting distracted here by the time. But I missed my September predictions, what I'm going to predict for next month. And I was excited because I nailed it this month for last month. So I'm a little nervous about this. But here's my predictions. Now, again, I predicted 695 last month, and it was 696 for total worldwide reports, and 515 I predicted, and it turned out to be 489. So it was a little off on the U.S. figures, but nailed the worldwide. I was pretty surprised by that. Anyway, September, I'm predicting 675 total worldwide reports and 471 U.S. reports. I don't know why they odd numbers. That's just the way it comes out. So I don't know. I don't know. But that's it. 675 total worldwide and 471 for U.S. sightings. So it came from Ohio. True Tales of the Weird, Wild, and Unexplained by James Renner. And if you're listening to the podcast, there should be a link there somewhere on well, it'll be on my Podbean site. Click on it. It'll take you to the book. I don't remember how much it was on the website. I can't remember here. Let me check real fast. You can get it pretty cheap. $9, a Kindle, $4. And it's got some pictures. It's actually stuff drawn in there, which is pretty cool. It's a good book. It's an interesting book. Granted, it's a regional book here for the state of Ohio, but we have some really weird and interesting stuff happening here. And speaking of weird and interesting, if you're interested in conferences, conventions, I do recommend checking out paranewsinsider.com, clicking on the events tab at the top. Didn't have time to really talk about those events. There's some really good ones coming up, especially this fall. Really looking forward to some stuff. Probably not going to get out as much to these that I want to get out to, but check it out. And if you have any information about any event and would like to hear it here, granted, I didn't talk about any tonight, but I promise if you send me something, I will talk about it. Insider at paranewsinsider.com or go to paranewsinsider.com and I have a little contact form. You can get a hold of me and say, hey, I got something I want to talk about. So again, a reminder, next week there will be no live show, but don't fret. I will be back on September 20th and don't forget about me. I'll be back. Trust me. I will be back. Yeah, I'm hoping. So again, big thanks to Cindy for producing the show, for doing all that hard work behind the scenes, and to Dita for, I don't know, whatever you do there in the chat room. Thank you. I appreciate it. Everyone else, Audrey for the MUFON sighting statistics, everybody else in the chat room there, thank you very much. I appreciate anybody and everybody listening, live or otherwise. Hopefully you're alive. To listen to the show. But if you're not alive, that's also pretty cool. Send me some sort of message so I can talk about it on the air. Keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck. And always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, you know it. Don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.
You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.